strike on their house in the village of Zoweida, which has caused us immense tragedy and indescribable shock. Nufal continued, My uncle Amin Muhammad Nufal, his wife Tamam Yusuf Nufal, and their children, Mu'tasim, Mu'min, Maysara, and Amal, were killed, and their sons, Mu'ath and Mustafa, were severely injured. The families of Mu'tasim, his wife Ahmad Ali Amina and Fatima, Mu'min, his wife Islam Mahmoud and Anas, Maysara, his wife and Shayma, Muhammad's sons Amin, Hamza and Ahmad, and Mu'ath's daughter, the child Mayas, as well as Mustafa's sons Muhammad, Amro, Mahmoud, Tamam, Amin, and the one-day-old Omar were all killed, she explained. Ibrahim Musa is a resident of the Nusayrat refugee camp. He explained that the Israeli regime forces killed all the members of his neighbor's family, the Al-Naghla family. Ibrahim issued an urgent appeal to all free people around the world to stand with the Palestinian people, put an end to the Zionist regime's crimes. The fabricated regime of Israel's ongoing larger-scale aggression on Gaza has already led to thousands of killed, wounded and missing persons, as well as the destruction of thousands of buildings and housing units, and the displacement of more than a million people to the southern areas of the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, the website of the New Arab wrote, As the brutal Israeli regime attack against Palestinian civilians continues in Gaza, scores of mass graves are buried there, with entire families being wiped out of the civil registry. The Gaza Strip's health ministry said the death toll from the Zionist regime's relentless bombardment has reached 8,525, including 3,542 children and 2,187 women. Furthermore, the number of children killed in nearly a month of the Zionist regime bombing has now exceeded the number killed annually in all the world's conflict zones since 2019. Palestinians say this war is robbing them not only of their loved ones, but also of their funeral rites. The Zionist regime's strikes have killed so many people so quickly that they have overwhelmed hospitals and morgues, making the normal rituals of death all but impossible.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, avoiding shirk through obedience. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. There are two types of shirk, polytheism. The first one is known as shirk-e-jali, which is open shirk or open polytheism. The second one is shirk-e-khafi, hidden or concealed shirk or concealed polytheism. Today we will discuss this concealed polytheism through inspecting shirk through obedience. When one obeys other than Allah and disobeys Allah, one falls into the shirk, the polytheism, through obedience. Allah says in the Holy Quran, "Did I not charge you, O children of Adam, that you should not serve Satan? Surely he is your open enemy, he is your manifest enemy. And that you should serve me, this is the right way." In this verse of the Holy Quran, Allah is reprimanding and asking a rhetorical question. The equation is serving Allah versus serving Shaitan. Now, you may say that, you know, generally speaking, very few or probably none. I would say very few people would claim that they worship Shaitan or Satan. Well, that may be true when it comes to open shirk or the shirk-e-jali. But when it comes to shirk-e-khafi, if you notice, many around the world give in to the insinuations of shaitan. When they do indecency, for instance, when they do corruption, for instance, that is direct submission to shaitan, Satan. This is shaitan's obedience. But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Quran has stopped us from obeying shaitan. And instead, Allah has commanded us to obey him. So this is where it's very important for us to realize that worshipping shaitan or obedience to shaitan is not only when we claim that we are doing so. Sometimes our actions, they end up having the same effect that we are worshipping shaitan and being obedient to shaitan. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing shirk through obedience, which is polytheism through obedience, and we are saying do not serve shaitan, the Satan, the accursed Satan. The Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "No obedience to any creature is allowed when it is a disobedience to the Creator." That means when it is at the expense of being disobedient towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You're not allowed to be obedient to anyone. There is, you know, generally speaking, no problem in obeying other than Allah if there's a condition. It is in line with obedience to Allah, right? As a matter of fact, that obedience is prescribed. So for instance, let's take the Imams of Ahlul Bayt. When they say something which definitely is in the line of obedience with Allah, we're supposed to listen to Ahlul Bayt. When Prophet of Allah, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, gives us a directive which definitely and surely is in line of obedience of Allah, then we must submit and surrender and practice that, right? Similarly, if one of our teachers, you know, they tell us something, right, which is in line with the obedience of Allah, we are supposed to listen and follow those instructions. Scholars, similarly, you know, during so many speeches across the world, they convey to us the obedience of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and what Allah requires. We are supposed to listen and act on it. Similarly, our parents, you know, a lot of times our parents are telling us good things which are in line with the obedience of Allah. And this is where we must obey our parents, right? But if anyone, whoever it can be, possibly, potentially, whoever, right? It doesn't matter. If they are saying something which is not in line with the obedience of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, make sure not to listen and not to practice that.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
In the limelight.
Palestinian children and adults are getting sick all the time with diarrhea, vomiting, and fever because of lack of clean water and unsanitary conditions following the Zionist regime's recent attacks on the Gaza Strip. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, in a tent set up in the playground of Deir al-Balah School for Girls in Gaza, the Abu Owaili family took refuge from the Zionist regime's bombardment of their neighborhood. The Palestinian family is like tens of thousands of other families who fled their homes in northern Gaza Strip and Gaza City and are currently scattered in schools run by the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, UNRWA, in the southern part of the besieged enclave. According to healthcare professionals providing support to the internally displaced persons, IDPs, in the schools, epidemics are spreading fast due to lack of clean water, medicine, and hygiene products. Wael Abu Owaili, a former resident of Gaza City, told Middle East Eye, "We have been displaced twice since the beginning of the war. We first fled to the Gaza School for Boys in Gaza City, before the Israelis dropped leaflets telling us to evacuate. We took a taxi and had to pay him 200 shekels to flee this school." He added, "Since we came there, we have been getting sick all the time. We are suffering from diarrhea, vomiting, and fever. And it is not just us. Almost everyone here suffers the same symptoms. They mostly give us paracetamol, and it is not enough." The 26-year-old father is staying along with 24 members of his family, including his mother, brothers, sisters, and their children, in a 2x3-quarter-meter tent behind the school's main building. "If our health condition worsens, they sometimes give us antibiotics, and we have to secure the rest of the medicines ourselves," he told the Middle East Eye. "I used to sell vegetables, but since the beginning of this war, I haven't been able to work and thus don't have any money." Of the over 8,000 people taking refuge in the Deir al-Balah school in the central Gaza Strip, epidemics have spread among at least 90%, according to doctors working there. The most common and fast-spreading diseases that are turning into epidemics in accommodation centers are gastroenteritis, scabies, and chickenpox, doctors told MEE. Abir Salem, a volunteer nurse at Deir al-Balahi School, told MEE, "Almost everyone here has a gastroenteritis, accompanied by diarrhea, vomiting, fever, and a sore throat. This is an expected result of the disastrous conditions in the IDP accommodation centers." She added, "Water is not always available, and when it's available, it's not clean. There are no hygiene products. Mothers here would love to keep their children clean and healthy, but where do they get these products? Every day my colleague and I check on the families here, and in all the classrooms we enter, there are dozens of people, mainly children, suffering from these symptoms. Once we enter the classroom, all mothers ask for diapers because their children suffer from diarrhea and need to change their diapers around 6 to 7 times. We don't have enough diapers to cover the needs of all families, so we give each mother a few ones each day." Salem added that IDPs seeking refuge outside the school also come to ask for medicine and diapers as they flood their homes without enough money. "The majority of children," she says, "are wetting their clothes because of the trauma and the cold," she explained. "It gets very cold at night. People sleep on the floor and don't have enough blankets." She continued, "Many children in each classroom are wetting their clothes. A few days ago, a mother came telling me she herself is wetting her clothes. You can't imagine that all of these people are wetting their clothes and blankets several times a day, and there are not enough hygiene products to clean them. The epidemics are spreading very quickly." According to Salem, around 30 to 50 people stay in each classroom, and such cramped conditions enable the spread of the disease. But what is more dangerous is that some pregnant women were forced to give birth inside the accommodation centers, including the schools, while ambulances could not reach them as the bombardment continues. 7-month pregnant Asmahan Altum, who fled her home in the northern Gaza Strip, says she's terrified that she might be forced to give birth in one of the school's classrooms. She said, "My home was bombed, and I came here along with my husband and 2 children since the first day of the war. As a pregnant woman, I used to take vitamins and other supplements. Here, I haven't been able to have any of those. I cannot even find a mattress to sleep on. I sleep on the sand. Even the water is not clean. Every time I drink water, I get sick and suffer from diarrhea and fever. Can you imagine having a fetus inside your belly and only getting to eat less than 1 loaf with a small amount of canned meat a day?" Healthcare professionals in the school receive daily reports from other accommodation centers, including UNRWA-run schools, about new diseases spreading among the displaced people. The potential for disease is exacerbated by the Zionist regime's targeting of schools across the strip, eventually forcing increasing numbers of IDPs into the remaining crowded buildings. According to Al Jazeera English, severe overcrowding, a lack of privacy, and inadequate sanitation have put these schools at risk of a prolonged and severe public health crisis, adding pressure to the already overloaded healthcare system, which doctors and the health ministry describe as being in a state of total collapse. The displaced people in these schools have also lacked access to life necessities such as water, electricity, food, milk, nappies, and essential supplies.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is Sayyid Mustafa with IRIB English Radio, and you're listening to Youth Station, and with me is my co-host.
Yeah, I'm Beta, and I'm really glad to be here again at Youth Station.
The topic that we're going to be discussing today, I think it's extremely important, and it's quite relevant to the world today, and that is of the amount of oppression, the amount of arrogance, the amount of injustice. It's almost, it can get to a point where you feel like you just want to give up sometimes, right? It can be overwhelming when you see the amount of injustice and
oppression.
I want
to be isolated. And, this is the thing that I think every day I'm dealing with, specifically because I'm living in Tehran. And Tehran is a big city full of different variety of people.
Right.
For example, the mere example that I have for now is that I live in dormitory. So our dormitory, doesn't accept mailing the objects and
like physical things.
Yeah, physical things. And this is our own right. You know, we have it in our principles that this is the right of the student who lives in dormitory to have their own mailings and something like that. And they're like, no, we have no responsibility for that or something. And, a majority of people that are living in dormitory are like, oh, come on. Why do you feel like you have to do something about it? Take it easy. You can have another address or something, or you can go to the somewhere to get your thing or something. And they don't want to fight, they feel like it's not necessary.
You know what I would say to these people is, if you allow, well, I don't know about, I'm not going to go into the university.
It was just an example.
But in general, I would say that if you allow people to continue being arrogant and committing sort of these sort of even small injustices, taking away people's rights, you sort of empower them to do even more. Like, they'll become even worse. It's not like you sitting back and not doing anything and having fun will make the problem go away. No, you're just going to make the problem much, much bigger. And then you're going to have to face even worse consequences in the future. And I think that's what we see, right? That when you don't resist, when you don't stop people from doing the wrong things, they become worse. Have you ever faced any situation like that?
Yeah, I have a belief in my life that when you are silent towards any oppression, towards any sin, it's a bigger sin and oppression itself. Okay, so if you're looking at someone that is committing a sin, you have to remind that person and not to do that. This is your responsibility, and it's not like you telling me like, no, I'm not in the mood to do that. No, it's not like that. Life is different. And I do believe that most of the people in my generation, I mean youth generation, as we are in the youth station, are like, oh, come on, it's not our responsibility or something. And they are, under the influence of this individualism, a school of thought that we are facing. And they feel like, I'm living on my own. I don't need you. You don't need me. So there is no responsibility.
Well, sometimes it can be scary as well, right?
Yeah.
To stand up against someone or to confront someone.
It is. It is really scary.
How do you deal with that fear? Like, how do you, what do you do if you are scared of going up against someone?
So let's keep my story here. And we're going to have a break.
Okay.
This
is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So we're back from the break, and I was just asking you, you know, it's scary sometimes to go up against, you know, injustice. What do you do in that situation? How do you...
You know,
that.
At first, I was a really, really shy person. And I was like, I couldn't even tell my own name to someone. I couldn't communicate easily. And I didn't speak till the moment someone asked me something that I was in a situation that I was forced to answer that person that I was talking. Mm. But I get to some point that I understood that if you don't tell someone that you want, that person doesn't have a kind of miracle or something to read your mind. You have to tell them.
Right.
Okay? So this is the first step, that you have to understand the necessity of talking to someone out of something or into something and your influence in other people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it was the first step that I tried to practice it every day in every part of my life, mm-hmm. especially at school, universities, and the people that I was communicating with. I was practicing this method to talk to them, to try to convince them if I feel they are correct or incorrect. And even sometimes I get to this point that I was mistaken, okay? Mm-hmm. I was the one that was putting an oppression on someone, and they're telling me, they're justifying me not to do that. And the thing is, you have to put that fear out. You have to ignore it.
You have to be brave.
And this bravery is not something that you can gain by one night. You have to practice it.
Yeah. Exactly. That will be my answer as well, is that you have to... face your fears. Be scared, but do the right thing.
Yeah.
Be
Which
brave.
Is really difficult.
It's difficult, but the benefit of doing that, by the way, it will make you stronger. Right now, you'll see that you've gained so much out of it. And one of my teachers was saying that. He said, let's say you are facing a fear. And it doesn't have to be, by the way, facing only injustice. Sometimes you feel that... He said sometimes people have the social anxiety that they won't even enter his office to talk to him.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're feeling like, oh, I don't know if I should go in and say something or not. He said, if you have that thought, ignore it and just do what you're supposed to do.
I know.
Because if once you do it, you'll feel relief. You'll be thankful that you did that, actually. But I guess my next question would be... what would you say? Sometimes I think when people are trying to fight injustice, they become very emotional, right? They become emotional to the point where it harms their cause. Would you say, is that correct?
It is.
Right?
I believe that if you want to gain something, you have to sacrifice something else.
Right.
This is the rule of life. If you want to have joy, you have to actually go through the rough time and difficulty to get that joy. And that's success, okay? And this is the same. If you want justice, if you want the world to be in peace, you have to do something. And sometimes this something may be the sacrifice of something really important to you. As we see, for example, in wars between countries, unfortunately, that we have sacrifice. But to what cost? You are sacrificing yourself, your body, to a kind of really... a valuable, invaluable opinion, okay? So this is really important. I mean, the world is on the, basis of intention. It's really important that what is your intention, whatever you do.
Mm-hmm.
And, up to here, we talked about these kind of little aspects of oppression that we are mm-hmm. facing in our routine life. But as you know, even in the world, in the past, if you look at the history from the first moment that people were on the earth up to now, there was oppression. There was this imperialism.
Right.
The looking that they had that I have to be empowered and I have to rule over you, oppress you, whatever
right.
I'm going to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a huge part of the world that we're living in right now, is we have powers that feel that they're better than everyone else. They feel that.
Exactly.
And they need to enforce their sort of way of life on others. And that's a big part of the injustice that we have to fight. One method that I feel that we can fight, for example, one thing, we have to raise awareness, right? We have to have awareness of what's going on in the world.
I think this one is the key.
Well, after having that awareness, let's say I'm aware now. What do I do next then?
No, right? Nice question.
Why do I have to?
So, brother, let's have the answer
after the break. Right, we'll be right back.
One of the du'as that I really like from As-Sahifa As-Sajjadiyya is the 24th supplication.
Okay, so we're back, and I was just saying, what do we do once we know there's oppression in the world and we have that awareness? What do we do next, right?
Really, what do we do?
I wouldn't underestimate the current generation, by the way, okay? There are some amazing youth in today's world that are doing amazing work, by the way, whether it's in media or in other. So after raising awareness, you actually have to raise your voice against the oppressor, right? If you're just going to sit at home knowing what's going on and just you're just a spectator, right? You're just an audience member of what's going on. You have to get actively involved in whatever you can do, you should do it, I would say. Whatever ability you have, you should apply that in your life.
Yeah.
For example, I think you're becoming a doctor, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So as a doctor, you're going to be in a position in society where you're going to have influence and you're going to be able to speak up against the oppressors.
Yeah, it's a big responsibility, I think, which is a bit sad, you know, because most of the people see it as a blessing, which is a blessing, but every blessing has a bigger responsibility behind that. And, as you mentioned, the responsibility of someone who can do something, who knows something, and doesn't raise their voice, then there is a problem here, okay?
Right.
And because of that, I'm telling you that there is responsibility for every single one of us. We're sitting here talking together out of there. And because of social medias, we have so many informations. We have, we can raise our knowledge. We can know. We can be aware. So this cannot be an excuse for someone.
Definitely. And social media these days is one platform that can be used to fight this oppression that we've been discussing,
exactly.
Right? And it's even our scholars, like our mujtahids have told us, Ayatollah Khamenei, Ayatollah Sistani, all of these people have told us, use social media, raise your voice, do not be quiet. Even if it's one sentence you write, they say, do it, right? It's important. Some people think it's useless, it doesn't have an impact. It has a huge impact, okay?
Exactly.
It has a huge impact on the world. In fact, I would say on the opposite side of this, the people that are running these social media sort of, you know, like Instagram and Facebook and whatever we're using, they've started censoring people.
Yeah.
Right? If it was useless, they wouldn't feel the need to censor people.
I get it.
Right? So there's actually an impact on it. So that's only one small way that you can actually fight against that oppression in this world.
Yeah. The last thing I want to add to our episode is that you mentioned something really beautiful. Sometimes if you feel like it's just kind of useless to do something, to raise your voice, to write a sentence in social media like Twitter or Instagram or somewhere, and you feel like, no, there is no need to say, who am I to do that? Okay? And unfortunately, it's a really, really bad point of view. We have a kind of proverb in Persian, drop by drop, we'll have an ocean, you know? And I think it's really beautiful. It doesn't matter how tiny, how subtle, and how little your voice is, it's going to have its impact. It's going to have an influence in the world and this oppression that we are facing in every moment.
And one final thought I would say is just don't lose hope, right? Have hope in Allah, have hope, you know, in yourself, have hope in other people around you, that things can get better and that you can make a change.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that the people that are doing injustice, they instill a sense of hopelessness in us. Like you said, uselessness. You know, what can we do? They're so powerful. They can do. No, you have to have hope and, you know, study history, study things, and you'll realize, and that will give you a lot of hope. So I think that's all the time we have for this episode.
Yeah, unfortunately. And at the end of the day, if you are the supporter of the bright side of the story, God will always protect you. And who's better than God and Allah Almighty to protect you on this road?
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Pleasure is mine.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif, 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 Ya Latif,
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
International human rights organizations are saying the Israeli regime's use of internationally banned weapons in its attacks on Gaza, especially the use of cluster munitions and white phosphorus bombs, are well documented. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Website of Al Mayadeen Television Network has covered this story and tells us more. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor reported that the Israeli occupation forces dropped over 25,000 tons of explosives on the Gaza Strip since 7th of October. The organization said the amount is equivalent to two nuclear bombs. The Geneva-based human rights group, the Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor, said in a statement on Thursday, 2nd of November, the Israeli occupation forces have admitted bombing over 12,000 targets in the besieged Gaza Strip, with a record tally of bombs exceeding 10 kilograms of explosives per individual. The Euro-Mediterranean Monitor highlighted that the weight of the nuclear bomb dropped by the United States on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in Japan at the end of the Second World War was estimated at about 15,000 tons of explosives. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor said, considering the technological development of the effectiveness of bombs, the explosive drops on the Gaza Strip may be twice that of a nuclear bomb, which means that the destructive power of the explosive dropped on Gaza exceeds what was dropped on Hiroshima. Noting that the area of Japanese city of Hiroshima is 900 square kilometers, while the area of the Gaza Strip does not exceed 360 square kilometers. The statement underlined that the Israeli regime uses bombs with huge destructive power, some of which ranges from 150 to 1,000 kilograms, referring to the statement of Israeli War Minister Yoav Gallant, who said more than 10,000 bombs have been dropped on Gaza City alone. Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor said Israel's use of internationally banned weapons in its attack on Gaza have been well documented, especially the use of cluster munitions and white phosphorus bombs. The Euro-Mediterranean Monitor's team has documented cases of injuries among the wounded, due to Israeli airstrikes similar to those caused by dangerous cluster bombs, as they contain small high-explosive bomblets with shrapnel penetrating and causing explosions inside the body, leaving it with severe burns that lead to skin melting and sometimes to death. In addition, these fragments cause strange swelling and poisoning in the body, including transparent fragments that do not appear on X-rays. Euro-Mediterranean Monitor further stressed that Israel's destructive and arbitrary attacks come in violation of the international humanitarian law, which stipulates that the protection of civilians is obligatory in all cases and under any circumstances, and that massacring civilians is considered a war crime in both international and non-international armed conflicts and may amount to a crime against humanity. The Euro-Mediterranean Monitor called for formation of an independent international investigation committee into the volume of explosives and the internationally prohibited weapons that the Israeli regime has used in its attack on Gaza. It also called on the international community to hold those responsible for such inhuman attacks accountable and to take the necessary steps to guarantee achieving justice for Palestinian victims. Al Jazeera Television Network has also covered the same story and tells us more. The Israeli army announced on Wednesday, 1st of November, it has hit more than 12,000 targets in the Gaza Strip since the war began about 3 weeks ago. The Israeli occupation forces has noted it has struck over 12,000 targets belonging to resistance organizations in the Gaza Strip. According to officials in the besieged enclave, Israeli army has dropped 2,500 tons of bombs on the Gaza Strip since 7th of October, or about two times the explosive force of the bomb that dropped on Hiroshima at the end of the Second World War. The Israeli regime has come under widespread criticism for its ongoing bombardment of Gaza, which has seen hospitals, residential buildings and schools hit, leading to martyrdom of thousands of innocent Palestinians. Earlier on Wednesday, the Israeli army published the names of 9 more soldiers killed in Tuesday's fighting, bringing the total number of those killed in ground battles over the past 24 hours to 11. In a post on X, the Israeli regime's war minister, Yoav Gallant, has called the killing of 11 soldiers in ground battles in Gaza a hard and painful blow. The war minister said Israeli forces paid a heavy price during their ground operations in Gaza, despite making significant achievements. According to the military, the total number of Israeli forces killed since 7th of October, when the Tel Aviv regime started its assault on Gaza, has climbed to at least 350. Israel launched the war on Gaza on 7th of October after the Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement Hamas waged a surprise operation, the Al-Aqsa Storm, against the occupying regime. Tel Aviv has also blocked water, food, electricity to Gaza, plunging the coastal strip into a humanitarian crisis. Middle East Eye has also covered the same story. Amnesty International's Donatella Rovera says investigations into 4 incidents on 10th, 11th, 16th and 17th of October in Gaza and in Lebanon have shown that the Israeli regime uses white phosphorus as a weapon in civilian areas. Donatella Rovera said the incidents that happened raise concern because white phosphorus has been used by Israeli military in the past, with devastating consequences for the civilian population. She added, "This is something that should never be used in areas where there are civilians. It is a banned weapon. It cannot be used on the battlefield, and forces do use it unlawfully. It should not be used where there are civilians." Donatella Rivera added, We've seen that it has been used in the Gaza Strip and also in Lebanon, and it shouldn't have happened. Israel waged its war on Gaza on 7th of October after Palestinian resistance movement Hamas initiated a multi-pronged surprise attack. Last month, Human Rights Watch reported having verified videos of Israel dropping controversial white phosphorus munitions, including over Gaza City. In 2009, the Israeli regime acknowledged using munitions containing white phosphorus during its offensive on Gaza between December of 2008 and January of 2009. Addressing the United Nations Security Council, the High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, once again appealed to the deadlocked members of the support for a humanitarian ceasefire, adding that the past 3 weeks in Gaza have provided devastating proof that disregarding the basic rules of war leads to tragedy. He said, "One must hope that a ceasefire becomes the first step towards embarking again, finally, on the path towards a solution." Filippo Grandi added, "The Israel-Palestine peace has been repeatedly and deliberately neglected." He added, "I hope that now, amidst the horrors of war, we can at least see how grave a miscalculation there has been. There will be no peace in the region or in the world without a just solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, including the end of Israel's occupation of Palestinian lands."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in a meeting with President Raisi and his cabinet on August 30, 2023, on the occasion of Government Week. Regarding controlling inflation, I stated in my speech at the beginning of the Iranian New Year that controlling inflation is also possible with a growth in production. In other words, the most important thing that can be done to control inflation is to raise and increase the country's production. So, our focus should be on production. If the focus is on production and it needs to increase, we need to see how we can increase it. There are two things that we need to pay attention to about this. One is that we need to support production, and two, we need to remove any obstacles that stand in the way of it. What do I mean by supporting it? The first thing is legal support. The regulations should allow production to be both easy and cost-effective for producers. There should also be financial support in the amount that is the responsibility of government agencies. Foreign currency and rial funds should be provided to the extent that this is part of their duties.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
There should also be cultural support for domestic production. Cultural support for domestic production means that we should help people understand domestic products should be consumed. In other words, wherever there is a domestic product, people should purchase that. This is the most important cultural support for production. Of course, in addition to this support, we need to be careful about this being misused. We have had periods when foreign currency and real funds were given for production, but were not used for production. And we are not talking about the small amounts either. The sums were very large. Some cheating had taken place here. We must be careful so that this and other similar events are not repeated. There are some who really know how to play around with economic issues. You sometimes see people who have more knowledge and awareness about the twists and turns of the economy than our senior officials in this department. They know the twists and turns. They know the loopholes. They use these to make huge illegal profits. There is nothing wrong with making a profit using legal means, but it is wrong to make a large illegal profit. We need to watch out for these things. So when I say that production should be supported, we need to also be careful that this isn't abused.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
At Sankofa, a black-owned bookstore less than 4 kilometers from the U.S.'s Congressional Center of Power. An historic lesson on political control and oppression learned beyond books.
We understand that this is all connected to colonialism. You know, here we are standing on stolen land right now on a settler colony called America, and our Palestinian brothers and sisters are struggling to defend their land from a settler, you know, colonial, Zionist state called Israel.
Because what's happening in Gaza right now is also an attack on Christianity. Let's be very, very clear.
Activist groups led by black Americans spoke out against the deaths of thousands of people in Gaza, highlighting historic affiliations between Palestinians and members of the African diaspora, comparisons of a tormented history of colonial enslavement and brutality.
So we say free, free Palestine, long live Palestine, death to colonialism in any of its iterations.
Black writers and civil rights leaders possess a decades-old history of relating to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, comparing the resistance against Zionism to the black struggle for independence against colonialism and apartheid.
The Zionists have laid claim to the land, and their process of laying claim is to wipe out all of the indigenous population and claim everything for themselves rather than living in peace.
Activists assert that blacktivism, a black resistance repudiation of colonialism, has a legacy with Palestinians. Interwoven, the patterns of subjugation and exploitation under political tyranny.
This is the 15th year for the Black People's March on the White House to speak out against injustices. It has also formed affiliations with other groups to condemn colonialism, much of it against marginalized populations.
You're seeing the state of Israel how it's working now to push the Palestinian people out and replace them. Look at what's happening in Washington, D.C. What you have in Palestine is nothing but armed gentrification.
These activists plan to march with Palestinian sympathizers in upcoming days while interrogating how to reach the elusive goal of equity and peace. Colin Campbell, Washington.
Thousands of Iranians from all walks of life took to the streets in various cities to mark the National Day of Fight Against Global Arrogance. November 4th marks the anniversary of the 1979 takeover of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, also known as the Den of Espionage, less than a year after the Islamic Revolution toppled the U.S.-backed Pahlavi regime. This day also marks National Student Day, therefore lots of young Iranians participated in this year's event. In the capital, tens of thousands of people took part in a rally to mark the takeover, marching from Tehran's Palestine Square to the former U.S. Embassy compound. They chanted anti-U.S. and anti-Israel slogans. Participants denounced the crimes committed by the West, particularly the U.S. against the Islamic Republic and other countries across the world. In this year's rally, pro-Palestinian sentiments were high as the Israeli regime continues the bombardment of people in the Gaza Strip. Participants condemned the Western countries' support for Israel's onslaught against Palestinians.
Anyone who violates the rights of the oppressed people across the world or supports those who do so is an arrogant power. They either support oppressors militarily, politically, or financially, just like the U.S., the U.K. and France, that clearly support Israel's aggression against Palestinians, including the massacre of innocent children, women, and civilians.
In a statement published on behalf of the protesters at the end of the event, they called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and warned the U.S., Britain, and France that the crisis might expand in the region.
By staging this rally, Iranians have once again showed their anti-arrogance spirit. They have also voiced their support for the oppressed people of Palestine, vowing to continue it until the full liberation of the Quds. Bahti Abbasian, Tehran.
Outraged Syrians and Palestinians gathered in the Yarmouk refugee camp in Damascus to support the people of Gaza against the brutal atrocities committed by the Israeli regime.
We have gathered today in Yarmouk camp to send a message of solidarity to our resilient brothers and sisters in Gaza who are bravely paving the way back to Palestine with their blood. We assure them that they are not alone. The Arab peoples, the resistance front, and the free people of the world stand with you.
We will liberate every part of Palestine by God's will. We express our gratitude to Syria and Mr. Bashar al-Assad for supporting us and taking an honorable stance. We tell everyone that our people will not die by the grace of God.
Protesters voiced their anger towards Western powers that have been supporting Israel's war crimes, specifically the recent massacre in the Jabalia refugee camp, which violates all laws, norms, and human ethics.
What happened in Jabalia and previous Israeli massacres provide clear evidence of regional and international collusion, but Gaza will not be left alone.
We say to Netanyahu and Joe Biden, call with all the strength and weapons you have by land, sea, and air. By God, we have prepared fighters who embrace martyrdom as fervently as you cling to life. Victory will be ours.
Demonstrators rejected the Israeli displacement projects and emphasized their absolute faith in Gaza's victory over injustice, pledging to defend Palestine and its nation's sanctities.
Cruelty, savagery, and monstrosity are words that no longer suffice to describe the Israeli criminality. But Syrians completely recognize these crimes, and once again, they confirm their resolute support for Palestine and the resistance. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Hundreds of mud houses of Afghans were demolished in the capital, Islamabad. Afghan refugees lived here for years but now have been told to leave. Hawal Gul's home is one of the mud houses that was also demolished.
We moved to Pakistan during the Russian invasion of Afghanistan. I was born in Pakistan. Tell us what to do, where to go.
Pakistan has said the campaign targets those who don't have any legal documents. But many whose houses were razed to the ground claim they have a refugee status.
The deadline was for the people living here illegally. But people here all have refugee cards. Yet we were not spared. They just came and demolished our houses.
The United Nations and other international organizations have expressed concerns over Pakistan's refugee policy.